Hello and welcome to the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. My name is Luke Burridge and this is a show where I review every single science fiction book that I read as I read it. There's no set schedule. It's just whenever I finish a book, I do the review, stick it up here on the podcast feed for everyone to download and listen to and hopefully enjoy. Joining me today, like normal, is Juliana.
Hello, everyone.
And today we're talking about, on the last episode, I said we were going to watch Dune,
yes,
part one and part two.
And we did.
And we did. And I'd finished the book. And I was like, well, that'll be the next episode. But I just recently finished the next book, which is Gateway by Frederick Pohl.
Oh.
And I was more interested in talking about that because, again, I know what I want to say about Dune. I've got opinions about the movie and things like
that. And we've done podcasts before.
We've done podcasts. We'll get to Dune at a later date. But let's get into this book. The reason I wanted to reread Frederick Pohl's Gateway is that I last read it in January of 2009. So
that's a while ago.
Almost exactly 15 years ago was when I last read this book, and I rated it highly. But then it was always in the back of my mind when I was putting together what we called the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast Must Reads List, which we put together 6 or 7 episodes ago for the episode 550. Because
yes,
every 50 episodes we do a special episode.
That was the one.
A non-books, no, non-movie, or like a special episode. So we did this one. And the idea is that, like, which books are the best examples of science fiction available to read today? Which books are best for those wanting a deeper dive into science fiction? And which old books stand the test of time, and which new books will we still be thinking about in decades to come? So here we go. Which old books stand the test of time? And when we were looking through this list of like 55 books, or was it 52 books? Yeah, one for each week of the year. That was the idea.
Yeah.
Or was it 55? Anyway, it doesn't matter. So we were like, let's arrange all the books by date. And it turns out the 1970s was completely empty.
Yes, so, big gap there.
Yeah, so since I've been going back and I'm like, oh, why are like, you know, because of course, earlier decades, like post, post War of the Worlds and The Time Machine, some of those are a bit empty. But once you get into like, there's books from the 1940s, books from the 1950s, books from the 1960s, books from the 1980s, yeah, you know, all the way to the modern day. And I was like, well, why nothing from the 1970s? So I reread one of them, which was, what was this? Oh, Joe Haldeman, The Forever War. And I was like,
oh, yeah, you did that one.
Will this one stand up the test of time? You know, I gave it like proper, you know, a high rating in the past, rereading it, and it was massively flawed, more dated. And critically, there isn't a definitive version because there's been various versions throughout the years, and this version I enjoyed less than the previous version that I'd read.
Yeah, so it's difficult to pinpoint down.
Yeah,
you
difficult.
Have to read exactly this version of this book, published at time,
that thing, like what books, like what science fiction is available to read today, you know, science fiction available today, and an old version which is no longer in print, that the audiobook version and the ebook versions, it's difficult to find actually what that original one is.
Yes.
Anyway, similar kind of thing here. So let's just head over to the I'm going to move the web browser over to this other monitor on my laptop so I can actually see this. So let's go over to Frederick Pohl's Gateway, the Heechee Saga number one. But forget that it's number one because nobody, I think, ever reads past the first book.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's like a saga, but really this is the one book. So here we go. First published January 1st, 1977. Literary awards. It won the Hugo Award for Best Novel, the Nebula Award for Best Novel, the Locus Award for Best Science Fiction Novel, the John W. Campbell Memorial Award for Best Science Fiction Novel, and then it was, yeah, the pre-Tour Apollo Award. I don't know what that is. Anyway, so 4 of the most well-known science fiction novel awards, Hugo, Nebula, Locus Award, and John W. Campbell Memorial Award, it won all of them.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's my reaction to it. Like, I don't have a big reaction to, oh, yeah, this book won all the awards.
No, but what I'm saying is,
that doesn't reflect anything.
No, but the whole point about the SFBIP must reads list is that, you know, it should be deemed an important book, award winning or masterworks. And this is one of those, you know, masterwork titles.
Yes.
It's on all of the lists of the best science fiction, everything that comes up. And so here we go, rereading it for the first time in 15 years.
And
well, let's get into it. The book is, I'll talk about some notes if you want. Previously I reviewed it and I gave it a 4.2 stars.
That's pretty high.
It is pretty high. And I'll get on to what my current rating is a bit later. One thing is that I listened to this as an audiobook and it's a good, a perfectly fine audiobook. The narrator is Oliver Wyman and he's fine. However, one of the things that I remember enjoying about this is the supplementary material to the novel, because it's set on a space station.
Yeah.
And you read notices that people are leaving for each other on the notice boards in the space station.
Okay.
And little adverts that people, you know, write and put up, like, oh, for sale, this kind of thing. And somebody writes a poem and somebody's like a misconnection and leave. And that was one of the things that I remember about the book. And I was like, well, how are they going to do this in the audiobook version?
Yes.
They don't.
Oh,
they don't.
It's just
not
mentioned
there at all.
Oh,
no.
Okay.
It's just one person reads the whole thing all the way. Oh, it actually starts with, hi, I'm Robert J. Sawyer, and I wrote an introduction to this book or a foreword to this book. And here, and I'm skip, you know, I never actually want to ever hear Robert J. Sawyer talk about anything. So,
yeah. But that means that in 2009, you did read it as a
paper book.
A paper book.
Yeah.
Okay. And then it was just a annex or like it was.
No, it was like just included in the text.
Oh, okay. Right.
That's what I remember.
Little subtitle, titles in between. Okay.
Yeah. It just interrupts the flow and there'll be like a box with some text in it.
Oh, right. Yeah.
That. Just not here at all.
Okay.
So didn't get that. Let me have a look at my notes here as well. So the setup of this book is strangely a bit like Heavy Time. Last episode
really?
That we talked about, which is like, hey, you're wanting a space adventure and there's going to be spaceships flying around and you're going to do all of that, you know, space here, adventure there, battles, you know, exploration, prospecting. And the last book, Heavy Time by CJ Cherry, was about people who are prospectors and they go out and they discover stuff which could be valuable and they're trying to strike it rich and trying to, you know, get the money in.
Yeah.
And then go back to Earth rich or go back to Venus rich or whatever.
Right.
This book. Kind of exactly the same.
Oh, really?
Not exactly the same. But I totally understand that when we, after recording the last episode, I was like, you know, I said, because I mentioned that there was a major plot point that Heavy Time has in common with the Expanse,
yes.
The Leviathan Wakes, to the point where I didn't even want to mention it in the podcast, because then, like, if you've read Heavy Time, I'm spoiling the Leviathan Wakes, and if you've read, although it's not really a spoiler, but it's just one of those things that, like, one of the core mysteries or one of the core identities of one of the characters is like the same in both books, to the point where how could this ever be a coincidence? This can't be a coincidence.
It isn't
a coincidence. And then you looked up, you found some stuff on Reddit, someone posting like, hey, surely there's, you know, the authors of The Expanse, you know, must have been fans of CJ Cherry, and they asked and they were or something, wasn't it?
Somebody sent a message and they just responded like, yep.
Yes. Yeah, it is. And then they said, because they were talking about that, we're just sort of like Down Below Station and some of these other things.
Yeah.
And then they said, and then I read Heavy Time and it's obvious, like, well, I feel stupid asking if CJ Cherry is but they also said, the authors of The Expanse, can't remember the names now.
S.A. Corey.
Yes, S.A. Corey.
But
that's not,
it's like conglomerate. Yeah, it's two different
authors.
I think, yeah.
Yeah, so they actually said that, yeah, Gateway was another, you know, influence on that as well.
The Frederick Paul book that you just read.
Yes.
Also, okay.
Because you mentioned that to me. Right. You told me that the authors of the Leviathan Wakes, The Expanse, said that Gateway was an influence on them. And I was like, oh, I'm literally reading Gateway. But what it is that both of these are the same because they're space prospectors. And in both of them, like in Heavy Time, it's the heavy time that they have to do on the space station while they're not prospecting.
So while they're grounded.
Yeah, while they're grounded. Yeah. And this is a book mostly about somebody who is a space prospector not going out on space prospecting missions.
Okay.
And instead hanging around on a space station for a long time. And I'm like, oh, I accidentally read back-to-back Heavy Time and Gateway, which is about people hanging out on a space station between space prospecting trips.
Right. So, but the order of the books would be Frederick Paul.
Yeah, Frederick Paul is earlier.
Then C.J. Cherry.
Again,
and then
C.J. Cherry isn't... imitate it, or I don't think that Gateway, or maybe it is an influence. Of course, it was a very popular book, but they're doing something very, very, very different.
Right.
But it's funny how the setting is very much the same, that you get, like, you know, some action at the start of Heavy Time by C.J. Cherry, and then the, like, 80% of the book is people hanging around in the space station.
Yes.
And the same thing happens. It starts off in the space station. You're like, right, he's going to go out on a space mission, isn't he? Like, 50% of the book goes past and he's like, yeah, I guess I better head out to space. And I'm like, yeah.
You're
cocking your head at me. You're raising your eyebrow at me. It's, yes, this is a story which you think it's going to be about space prospecting, and they're introducing this heechy, like, leftover technology that someone found on Venus, and then that ship took them to a space station, like this asteroid, and it's covered in, like, craters, and each crater has got a spaceship in it, which can either take one person, three people, or five people. people.
Right.
And so one person gets in it, and if you adjust the dials in a certain way and press a button, it'll take you somewhere, but you don't know where because it's random. You don't understand what the Heechee displays.
Oh, okay.
And then when you get there, you check it out, see if there's any like more leftover technology that's worth it or it's an interesting place. You press another button and then it brings you back again. And it's really dangerous because it could take you something, because this is all like leftover technology from 500,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And it'll take you some...
That people don't understand.
And so this is all being explained to you, like, wow, this sounds like a really interesting, fun, dangerous, exciting adventure.
Yeah.
And our main guy, Robinette, I think is his real name, but it's a male name, but you know, he's got mother issues, whatever.
Okay.
And he literally spends the first half of the book just going, oh, I should really head out into space, and not heading out on a space adventure. So what he's actually doing, he's alternating chapters of therapy sessions with him and his robot therapist that right. he calls Siegfried von Freud or whatever. I don't know. I can't remember what it is. No, Shrink, okay. Brainy, whatever. He's got a name for his Freudian robot therapist.
Okay.
And what the book is really about is a coward... having a therapy session about why he didn't want to go to space, and then when he went to space, the trauma he had in space and like the underlying issues that he's got as a person.
Oh god.
Here's the thing, it works. The novel works for me, and I just looked through some other from other reviews of this book,
right,
and half of them are saying the good stuff's the stuff on the space station and the space adventures and what the alien technology is.
Yeah.
And the other, and I hate the therapy sessions. And the other half of the reviews are people going, well, actually, the therapy sessions is really fun because it's like this send up of Freudian analysis and Freudian therapy. And it's sort of like joking about, you know, mother fixations and penis fixations and
right.
what caused his trauma and why he's like got this latent homosexuality and that he's, you know, he's trying to cover it up by having sex with as many women as possible to prove to himself that he's not gay or bisexual. Anyway, this comes out through the whole thing. Mm. And I find that really funny.
Mm-hmm.
And yet also kind of like not fun at the same time because it's kind of boring, but also it's not. And so it works, but also it just means that you're spending a lot of time with someone who's really fucked up, is cowardly, is terrible, is a coward, and
also seems like a disturbed person.
Yeah, disturbed person. So you're spending a lot of time with someone who's not very nice,
right?
And at the same time, is a super unreliable narrator who doesn't understand that. Like, because he's talking all in first person.
Right.
And then it switches to this, you know, therapy session and he's talking about it. And we're only from the therapist's point of view does the therapist said, why did you say that? And he's like, no, I didn't say that. And he's like, yes, you did say that. So it's only when we have the therapist, like error checking or picking up on the mistakes, the Freudian slips of the main guy, sort of like, why did you say Clara and not, you know, whatever the other person was, you know, Clara's one of the main characters, sort of like, you're talking about Susie, but you called her Clara. Why is that? So sort of like, why did you say your mother's name there? Or like, why did you say this? And you're like, oh, right. When he's telling the story to the therapist will pick him up on his lies.
Yeah.
And his, it, but when he's just telling us the story, he's just lying all the time.
We just get whatever.
But we get whatever. And again, I was thinking, you know, this was my reading of it. I'll just say, I'm not often interested in what 2009 Luke thinks about any book. But I was like, why did I rate this book 4.2 stars? And I went back and listened to it. I'm like, oh, you noticed all the good things that I noticed about this book this time and were impressed by it and thought it was very clever. And then didn't mention, except in passing, some of the bad things about this book.
Right.
And this is the strange thing, is that like listening to it this time, I think it's because I had someone reading it to me. So I was listening to it all from the point of view of an audiobook narrator who was just telling it straight. And I was like, oh, this was way more ironic in my head when I was reading it from the paper.
Mm.
And it's kind of annoying me because I always say, oh, I get everything that I want from an audiobook. But I'm like, ah, no, I don't always get everything I want from an audiobook. In the same way that, you know, you listen to some people overacting something and I'm like, it's not your job to put the, like...
To put the sarcasm in
to
it.
You just read me the text.
Yeah.
Please just read me the text. It's like those ones which put, like, dramatic music behind the dramatic parts. And I'm like, no, the book doesn't have music at this point in the text. There's not something that says script notes, dramatic music at that point. No, you don't have that.
No.
What you have is the writing will tell me if I'm meant to find something dramatic or not. I don't want the audiobook narrator to go up a register and talk really quickly. You know, the bad audiobook narrators do that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
So yeah, it's what I find interesting about this book is this idea of the unreliable narrator, where we have to piece together like what his trauma is. Like we have to be the Freudian, we have to do the Freudian analysis and the Freudian therapy and all that other kind of stuff on him to understand that almost everything he's saying is a lie, and not everything he's saying. In various cases, what he's saying is a lie, and the reasons he's giving for not doing something or not doing something may or may not be true.
Okay.
But now that I've listened to it this time, I was like, am I giving the book too much credit? And I think maybe, but also it's, if that's not what the book is, like, what is it then?
Yeah,
why is it written? Because again, you say, oh, it's a book about exploring the world. No, it's not. It's a book about someone going, like, half of the chapters are someone in therapy. It's a book about exploring. No, it's not. It's about a coward who doesn't want to explore. He had this opportunity and is wasting it, you know. Mm. It's a book about alien technology, which is mysterious. I'm like, yeah, maybe in later books, but that's not what this book is about. This book is about why he beat his girlfriend, you know, that kind of thing. And it's a bit disappointing this time out for my reading experience, which I was just kept on getting hung up with the stuff which wasn't working for me.
Right. I understand. I have a few questions.
Yeah, go for it.
So you have read other books by Frederick Pohl?
Yeah, a few, but not, I mean, he's not like a favorite author of mine, but I've read a few. Yeah, I guess.
Right. Is he American or German?
Yeah, American.
American.
Yeah.
Okay, right.
Must be? I mean, yeah, because just read the book. Like, if you read his writing, it's like very American.
Okay, he's American. So he wrote books in the 70s.
Yeah.
So probably born...
No, I think he wrote books all the way up until like a few years ago.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he like died a few years ago. I should actually check it out.
Oh, yeah. Please tell me. Also,
no, you
tell
keep
me,
talking and I'm going to click
when,
on his
when
name.
He was born. I'm kind of interested in like the time frame when he lived.
Yeah.
So I find it really interesting to come up with the idea of having a book and setting it in space with the setting of science fiction, and then having a character mostly doing a therapy session with a...
Look, I've told you about this before, that a therapy session is a classic way. Theodore Sturgeon's More Than Human, that main section of the book, the original short story that was then expanded out into a novel by having two, or like the original novella that was then given like a prequel and a sequel kind of section. That is someone just in therapy. And that I really enjoyed, a very over-the-top explanation, because it's someone telling his story to a therapist.
Yes.
In this book, it doesn't work quite so well because it's not him telling his story to a therapist. We get the story in like flashbacks, like in past tense, him telling us about it.
Okay.
But his therapy is just his therapist asking him, like, what did you dream about? Like, why are you dreaming about your mother?
Like
a you know?
Programmed therapist.
Yeah, like
of
a
course.
Robot therapist is going to be.
Yeah.
So, I'm not against the idea.
Yeah.
But this time, like, it didn't fully work for me.
Right. So is this like another... sort of a way for authors to do like the mirror, like, you know, how authors often, if they want to describe a character, they describe the character
it's
looking into a mirror.
Yeah, it's like an easy framing story. Well, not an easy framing story. It is
a
framing
of
story.
It's telling us about...
Yeah. But here's the thing, like, you've got to do something special with it. It can't just be... I need someone to tell a story to, you know, like this is what Asimov does. It's sort of like, how do I get three people in a room together and one of them tells the story to the other two people? And it doesn't matter because they're just there to like transfer information from one to another. Yeah. What I think Frederick Pohl is doing here, and what I think is clever about the book, is that he's leaving up to us to decide what's actually going on.
Mm, okay.
Rather than... not. And one of the things, like one of the main things of the book, is the sexuality of the main character.
Yeah.
And it's, and often, like, it turns out they're gay is like a gotcha in a book.
Yeah.
Or it's like a funny thing. It's like a punchline. Oh, this bad character that you thought was really bad. Oh, it turns out that they're gay. They've been gay from the beginning of the book. And I'm always a bit like, oh yeah, it's not really. And that's not quite what's going on here, but it's a little, it's something cleverer about it.
Right.
And then, but he has to paint a picture where people being gay is just like completely accepted. So in 1977, that it kind of feels very progressive.
Yeah.
And I know it's weird to say this, but this book feels very conservative or very unprogressive, feels very dated. Like the attitude towards women and the attitude towards other
from
people.
From our perspective,
our perspective. Yeah. If you miss the fact that this is someone who is the therapy session, spoilers now for the revelation of a therapy session in a novel from 1977. But the revelation is he's bisexual and is suppressing his homosexual urges.
Is that really a surprise?
And the way he treats women is him suppressing
trying to suppress
that. So actually, the revelation or the culmination of the story isn't the big space adventure that happens at the end. That's given short shrift to the point where he actually admits to himself that he's bisexual and that he's been covering up memories of a gay encounter on a spaceship. And all of the, you know, the woman hating us, all of that is that it's like him hating his own
part of himself.
Part of himself.
Yes, of course.
It's kind of not explicit enough to make me comfortable with all of the woman hating stuff that was in this book. Even if it's kind of, I know, like the future is. Gay people are equal, you know, there's people who are gay and people are not, and you know, and you can be part of this crew or not and things like that. And it's like, what do you think about gay people in the characters to themselves in the book? They're like, yeah, fine, whatever, you know, like it's not an issue.
So
except that is an issue because it's suppressing his head.
Yeah,
you know.
So but that's a bit confusing because
yes it is, it's a confused
because
book.
If like it must come from somewhere that he feels like this is something that he needs to suppress and be violent against, because like that often comes from society, like telling you you are wrong, this is not good, this is evil, this is whatever. But if this society doesn't do that,
well, and I think that's the main issue that I had with this book. There's plot holes in this book in terms of like, look, they've got a robotherapist who is like, you know, can think things through and solve problems and stuff. Why are they putting humans on these spaceships, sending them out, and half of them die and not come back? Like, put a robot on there, send it out. Like, again, I listened back to this previous review of mine, and I'm like, why are you talking about this plot hole? Like, it's an obvious plot hole, but it doesn't matter because that's not what the book is about.
Yeah.
And yes, the plot hole is if the revelation of someone is that he's ashamed of his, you know, homosexual tendencies. But the society that live in, there's nothing wrong with being homosexual in 300 years in the future. Then what's the problem?
Yeah, it feels like an author from 1977, writing a book.
And this is what
about what, like society, like a future society on one side being like very like open. And
I know, but here's the thing: this is one of the main issues that I had with Joe Haldeman's The Forever War, where he's sort of like, and in the future, 90% of people are going to be gay, and I'm like, oh, so the straight white American author is the one who gets to write that, you know, and he's talking about like how it, free sex and everyone's free and you know. Everyone, it's free love for everyone except the women. They're forced to be, you know, they have free love forced on them, but everyone else is all free love. And you're reading it, and you're like, oh man, like, and that's what makes it feel dated. It's actually for its time in the 1970s to be, how about free love and how about homosexuality is just accepted and like, what's so bad about being a homosexual? Like, it feels like someone is trying to be progressive, but it kind of feels more dated, like, because they're like, oh yes, and of course all homosexual men hate women and hate themselves because, you know, they see themselves as, and so you're like, all right, so to be more accepting of homosexuals, but because of that you end up beating your girlfriend and she then comes back and loves you for it. Well, not loves you for it, but loves you despite it. And I'm like, oh, it's really mixed. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Even though I appreciate the effort and I think it's clever, and I'll get onto one of the things that is clear about, like, makes this clear, it still makes you feel super uncomfortable. So it's that kind of thing. Does it hold up today? It's sort of like, well, no, for certain, no, it doesn't hold up today.
Yeah.
But 2009 me was impressed by it. And 2024 me is of also like, right, I can see what you're doing, but now I'm like wincing for the whole book, whereas before I kind of was like, oh right, this is
okay,
quite,
it has
kind
flaws,
of kind of...
but whatever. I wanted to ask, did you find the dates when Frederick Paul lived? Like,
oh yeah,
you looked for
he
it.
He actually died in died in 2013.
You wanted me to talk until you found
so
it.
So born 1919.
Oh wow,
so
yeah.
So super old.
Yeah.
He wrote science fiction for 75 years.
Okay.
From his first published work in 1937. Up until 2011, where he wrote so when I said he was still writing recently, yes,
yeah,
he was. He lived until he was 93 years old
in the US,
and yes, so he was born in New York City.
Okay,
And then and then he also he died. He wrote a novel when he was 91 years old. So he's
impressive.
One of those grand masters, as they call him, because he was like an editor of a magazine and like super prolific throughout, like, again, like from 1930s through to the, all that kind of stuff. Yes, he also won a Hugo Award for Best Fan Writer in 2010 for his blog, for some blog posts and things.
Okay, interesting.
The Way to the Future blog.
I have an additional theory about the 1970s science fiction books.
Yeah.
I think that was a time when people wrote science fiction books.
Yeah.
But it was mostly like a Trojan horse kind of thing. Or like, now Trojan horse is
right.
a bit of a
no,
wrong
I understand
word,
what you're saying.
But it's a packaging. It's a packaging for the things, for the society and important topic things to wrap it in there.
And I think one of the reasons why it's really difficult to still appreciate this is that the things that they're writing about, like in the 1970s, like Gateway and like the Forever War, is the issues that they're writing about. They're writing about with trying to have the sensibilities of someone from the future, but actually being super like baby boomer or whatever this generation is that he's like born
is
in
not
1990.
A baby boomer.
Yes, but I'm just saying like the world at the time, where sort of like, oh, we've had the summer of love and we all like the Beatles, don't we? Whatever it is,
but
like
even
that.
Then, like in the 70s, he was an old man.
Yes, of course, and that's what I'm saying is that like the vibe of this book feels old, even though the authors are trying to do something progressive. It's in the air, sort of like, all right, we'll talk about homosexuality, and over there, like Ursula K. Le Guin with The Left Hand of Darkness is sort of like, oh, how about no, you know, feminist and no women and no men and all, you know, all these different kind of things. They're all writing this stuff, but it's like the stuff that it doesn't hold up today, because now you read it and you're like, wow, this is like super like basic, like the issues that they were talking about there and the assumption, all the assumptions that I was talking about with the Forever War, that in the future it's going to be free love and everyone can have sex with everyone else, you know, that's all going to be fine.
But then you run
but
against
not,
the wall.
Yeah. Sort of like, oh yeah, then there was AIDS in the 1970s and, you know, and all of this other kind of stuff. And, you know, people started getting on cocaine. You know, I talked about this in the previous, in that review of The Forever War. Like the vibes at the time were very hopeful about free love.
Yeah.
The vibes at the time were very hopeful about this and that. And, you know, and then the 80s happened and the 90s, you know, like as we get to it, we're like, all right, some of that is solved, but other parts of it is super not solved. And other parts where we thought what the future was going to be. Like, again, I've read this before and I've heard people talking about it. And they're like, oh, we thought like, oh, we're going to do this. And then there's going to be like, we're going to, you know, gay people are going to be able to get married and get equal rights or whatever like that. And what's the next big thing? And they're like, oh, the next big thing is going to be like polyamorous people, and you're gonna have to, oh, we're gonna, oh, so gays can have marriage, well, let's go down further. How about three people being married? How about, you know, the triples or truple, no, what do they call it anyway, the thruples, that's what it says. So it's a couple and a thruple, and this is where it's gonna go, and we're gonna get back into like, oh yeah, polyamory and whatever it is. And it isn't. The next big thing is gender, you know. And you're like, oh, we didn't, oh, that, okay, gender, right? That's the next thing.
Yeah.
Or that's the current thing, or whatever the thing is that you want to talk about. Not the current thing, because that's got baggage, that term.
Yes.
But I'm saying, like, what's the thing, like...
The next step in the kind of the liberation of how diverse people
and
are.
And the thing is, what we have at the moment is sort of like, all right, we're all agreeing on gender, or like trans people, or like accepting of what's the next thing. Right, they've got a, like, gay people had a flag. All right, now trans people have a color scheme.
Agender.
Yeah, yeah, and gender fluid, non-binary, yeah, all that. Queer, like, oh, they've got a flag now. Right, what's the next group? And it's sort of like, is it going to be furries? It could be furries. It could be people who like dressing up as animals and having sex with each other. Is that going to be the same thing? Fursonas, like, you're frowning at me. I don't know what the next thing is going to be.
Well, nobody does.
No, and that's
but
the thing.
But at the moment, we're kind of going backwards anyway, so...
No, I don't think we are going backwards.
Well,
I think we've all decided that free love isn't the future. That's the whole point. That's the point. That's why these books feel dated, is that society has decided that gays, yes, progressive society is deciding, first of all, in the 1960s, it was like racism, no, if you know what I mean. Mm. And then it's sort of like gays, yes. And then we're all like, all right, yeah, okay, we're all on board. You know, like it takes a long time. You know, what is it? The future, like, was it the arrow of time, or justice, bends towards justice, or whatever it's going to be. I can't remember the names. All the sayings and stuff. But like what the science fiction authors thought was going to be the next thing, we as society have decided that people, like, free love isn't the next thing. You know what I mean?
Hmm.
And if you think having free love should be the next thing, you think that, oh, we've gone backwards because we've decided it's not the next thing. Like the summer of love and all that kind of stuff and free love and... That isn't the next thing. Society has decided that free love it wasn't going to be the next thing.
Right.
Do you understand what I'm getting at there?
Not really, okay. So sure. But I don't know what you mean with free love.
Just being able to have sex with anybody, and that sex isn't a thing that you are owned with someone else. You know, sort of like every being... Like, these science fiction books assume that... like non-exclusive open relationships are going to be the norm.
Right.
And they are not the norm.
They are not,
It's
no.
still weird. And when you hear people who have like open relationships and they're like, oh, I thought you, oh no, it's that. And everyone's sort of still like raising eyebrows. Like even the most progressive people who don't raise eyebrows at gay people, at trans people, at like all of like other things, and then they see people in an open relationship, eyebrows still raise. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Like it's fine. Like there's lots of things which people go, oh, in the future, single mothers, like people who have children out of wedlock, that's going to be fine. And we're all like, yeah, that's fine. But there's still a lot of things which still raise eyebrows that we've all decided that our eyebrows still raise.
I want to make a slightly different point to this.
Yes, of course.
I don't think it's about the eyebrow raising. I think it's more about the struggles that these people still have.
Sure.
And the experiences
and the structure of society against them or for them.
It is in certain societies, like a Western world, like, let's say Europe, and in the like Western European countries, you can do all that.
Yes.
But the difficulties that you keep running again and again against it, I think this is what the science fiction authors are depicting in their books as that will have been solved.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like Star Trek, you know, how like, everything is like...
Yeah, it's solved now. Yeah, yeah.
Everybody lives how they want and everything's great and we love each other. Just the outside is basically the problem, you know.
And so again, I didn't mean to get sidetracked in that, but again, that's what it comes down to is like... what the authors in the 1970s thought would be the next thing turned out, some of it turned out to be the next thing. Big other chunks turned out for it not to be the next thing.
Yeah.
And then and then other things are kind of like sideways on, like, you know, like the legalization of like cannabis, of, you know, weed.
Yeah.
In all these books, sort of like everyone's smoking. All these 1970s books, people just smoke.
Yeah. Well, in the 1970s,
like
everybody did smoke weed.
Yeah. But here's the thing. What we're actually doing is like legalizing weed, but then making it so cigarettes are more constrained. You know what I mean? So like, yes, weed is legalized, but also the age that you're allowed to buy cigarettes, I think in the UK, is going to go up by one year every year.
Yeah, in Australia.
Yeah, and stuff like that. And you're like, oh, right. So in the future, everyone just smokes all the time in these 1970s books and they're smoking weed. And you're like, all right. Okay.
Because that's what they did in the 70s.
Of course, in the 1970s, everyone's smoking weed. And it was so ingrained in this book and the other book. It's sort of like, oh, yeah. And then I started then I got high on some weed and I was like, on a spaceship. Okay, whatever. Like, sure.
But that is but... so 1970s. Yeah, of course. Everyone's because going... people didn't even think about right. that might be something that might disappear in the like, you know, yeah. future when that book is set. Yeah. They didn't even question that what they experienced in the 1970s
yeah.
would be something that wouldn't even be like this.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like now I read these reports saying, oh yeah, young people are less and less interested in sex. You know, they're not interested in like when I was a kid, I say as a kid, when I was a teenager, like obviously everyone's obsessed about sex and everything. Like when I was at university, everybody's entire social life was going out and trying to work out who they were going to have sex with, if you know what I mean. It was like the main aim of every 19-year-old guy when they went out drinking. And it seemed to be that was kind of the main aim of all the 19-year-old girls who went out drinking as well.
Okay.
Like, it was just part of life was, all right, we're all going out and we're all going to get drunk and, like, you know, a quarter of us might have a chance to have sex tonight. Who's it going to be and who's it going to be with? Again, this is just what life is like for 19-year-olds and 20-year-olds or whatever when you're in university for the first time. You're away from your parents. You're like, you know, you're separated out. You've got that taste of freedom. A huge part of life is that, you know, a huge part of your drive of like why you're even going out is like, how much alcohol can I drink and will I have sex tonight?
Okay, that's fun.
I'm it just wasn't, saying.
I was the person. No, let me now say yeah. it because you just stated how your.
No, I'm saying.
That was 19. I know that's 98% of people are like that.
No, no, me, my point is it's no, not that true. That's not the case anymore.
Okay, but in the time when you were 19, that was the case. Okay, we agree. That was
I'm
just
saying
what
the
you
trend
just said.
Line
let
from
me just
opinion
say something.
Pieces. Okay, I thought you did.
No, I didn't oh, okay. because you kept interrupting me. All right, so.
I was halfway through a point, but carry on.
Yes, and I want to now interrupt.
Okay, you're interrupting my point. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
And I want to say that my experience was different because I had a car, so I was the person taking everybody home after they got really drunk.
And so
I didn't have that experience.
Right, okay.
I just want to say these people like me also existed.
Yeah, well, that's fine. What I'm trying to say is that now I read the opinion pieces or the think pieces or see links. I say I don't read them. Maybe I see links to them on Twitter or whatever.
Yeah.
Not that I'm on Twitter anymore. But the whole point is that, like, the studies are showing or the sociologists are proving or whatever it is that young people now are having, like, losing their virginity later, having less and less sex. You know, this generation, what are we up to?
Z? Y?
X? Z? X? No.
Z? Alpha?
Why are it millennials? X? I'm Generation X.
Yeah.
Like born in 1980-ish.
Yes.
Or that's where the where the boundary is. Then you get millennials.
Z and Alpha.
And then Z and Alpha.
Yeah.
Z and Alphas are growing up and they're a lot more, what you say, Puritan. You know, there's a lot less. And they're offended by sex in movies a lot more. I don't know. It's just a cultural thing. Mm-hmm. Like, and that kind of really gets at me when I see so many movies now and I'm like, right, and now there's going to be a hot sex scene. It's like, this is an 18-rated movie. You're like, this is whatever. It's an adult movie with adult themes. There's loads of violence, blood, swearing, like lots of issues. And like, and now we're going to have a hot sex scene. And like, we just watched that Dune and I'm like, all right, here we go. We're going to have the Zendaya, Timothy Chalamet, Chalamet, is that his name?
Yeah.
Chalamet. And they're like, right, these two young, hot, beautiful people, this is the point in the book where they fall in love and have sex. And they're like, you know, montage, fuzzy camera, cut to the next day. And I'm like, if this movie was from like the 1990s, there'd be a hot sex scene here. Like there would be something titillating.
Yeah.
But there isn't. Again, that's just the standard for movies. There was that Batman movie as well. Who's that? You know, the guy with the jaw, Batman. And then there's the whatever her name is, Catwoman in there. And I'm like, all right, here we go. They're getting together. This is the moment. Hot sex scenes, and they just ride their motorbikes next to each other for a while. And I'm like, okay, I get really? The metaphor. Okay. I get the metaphor that they go out for a motorbike ride together. But what I was expecting there is a hot sex scene. And if this was a 1990s movie, we'd have a hot sex scene here.
Absolutely, I 100% agree. And you know what?
What?
This kind of cycling behavior in society.
Yeah.
Is visible in so many ways. And that is totally, I agree completely. And I think, and I, I, I'm not agreeing with that, but that's what happened.
Yeah, yeah.
In the 80s and 90s and early 2000s, I think certain things were just a bit so much over the top that everybody decided...
it's a reaction against it.
We don't want
it's
this, whatever it's, that yeah, was, we don't
totally
want
a reaction.
This.
It's totally cyclical. Like,
absolutely.
And that's the thing, because... us Gen X people grew up in a time when our parents had done all the free love kind of stuff. But then, you know, in the 1980s, there was an AIDS epidemic. So we didn't have the free love. So we had all the... But then we did have access to titillating movies on VHS. And, you know, there was a whole industry of, you know, like Basic Instinct movies and that kind of stuff.
But also what we had was the... sexualization, over-sexualization, and the body, the weird body imaging and body shaming of like young women.
Yeah,
then,
sure.
Like that was
I'm
like
not saying
so...
it's good.
No,
I'm just
that
saying
was, that,
as someone
that was
who grew
so
up...
much. And now people are saying, okay, look, we can't show this to like the, you know, it's just not cool.
So what I'm saying is that there's cycles in culture.
Absolutely.
There's cycles in entertainment and things. Now, here's the thing. This is one of the main things that stuck out to me about reading this book for the first time, is that this book is the book with the most sex in it ever.
Is it?
This is, yeah, because the guy is having sex all the time. It, like, and it, also there's lots of assumptions about what good sex is, which is kind of mentioned. And I'm like, oh, really? Whatever? Okay, that's fine. But... he's like the protagonist, and he's always like, I'm the protagonist, and then I'm going to have sex with this female character. And every female character is described in a way which is what makes him attracted to her.
Hmm.
And if she's not attracted, if she's not attractive, if she's a bit older, a few years older, and she, oh, no, it's not good enough, but then he'll have sex with her anyway. If she's maybe not quite as attractive, maybe she's slightly overweight, but he'll have sex with her anyway. And then he goes out and finds someone, and she's a bit young, but he'll have sex with her anyway. And so this book is a book full of sex, except nothing is ever described, and it's not sexy, and it's not titillating, and it's not interesting, because to be honest, I don't think he actually had sex with any of these except for maybe two of the women.
Right.
He is an unreliable narrator.
Yeah.
And the way for him to prove himself that he's absolutely 100% not gay and not bisexual is that he really, really, really needs to say that these people who he's really close with and never mentions that he had sex with them, he obviously had sex with them. And then every other woman who he mentioned in the book that is
he
named...
he obviously had sex with.
So he has sex with 100% of the men, of the women, and 0% of the men, until you realize later on he's massively ashamed of having sex with his next door neighbor. And you're like, why are you not wanting to go on the mission with this guy? And it's like, yeah, like there's bad, like he thinks that's an issue. Like he doesn't want to be in this.
Mm.
And then I was thinking, is this me reading too much into this? Is this me thinking too much about this book? And I was like, I've never read a book with more sex, which is with zero amount of flirting beforehand. Zero. You know, I was talking about the Night's Dawn trilogy by Peter F. Hamilton.
Yes.
And that is like a totally, you know, Gen X kind of book. You know, I what do I call it? Penis Adventures. What is it? Captain Whatever's Penis Adventures. And that's what it is. But what makes his penis adventures fun is that you see him flirting with some women, and he's a space captain. He's a dashing space captain. Mm. And the person is like literally a princess and owns the whole ship. You know, like, yeah, all right, a princess and a space captain, and they flirt and they do this and they go back. And of course, like the sex is kind of described, but you're only interested about it. It's only titillating because you see the seduction or you see the flirting, and then you realize, oh, wait, she seduced him. That was, we thought, like, and that's what makes it fun. It's like we thought it was him seducing her, and then it turns out, oh, no. The women were like, she got what she wanted.
He was played.
Yeah, he was played. Now it's like, ta-da, you're going to be the father of my child. And he's like, wait, I thought we were just having casual sex. And she's like,
well, you should have thought
that before. So, like I say, that's a book with a lot of sex in it, but it's fun, sexy sex because you follow along with the flirting, you follow along with the development, and that's what makes...
So this was more a list.
And this is a list of people he's had sex with, and sort of like, yeah, and I went and picked up some fresh fish and had sex with them, and I was like, no, you didn't, because you're a self-hating gay man and is using the fact
bisexual.
That...
bisexual.
Oh, yeah, or bisexual. That you... The reason that you settle for the woman that... or the woman that's there, you have mother issues, and you find someone, like, it literally says at the end, here's a picture of... of Clara. And she's like, oh yeah, that's Clara. It's like, no, fooled you. It's actually a picture of your mother when she was younger. And sort of like, they do look very similar. It's like, yes. And then, you know, again, I'm giving away what the twist of the book is, but I think I have to explain it better in this podcast, what I enjoy about this book or what I thought was interesting about this book than I did in the previous podcast, where I don't explain all of this. I just thought, oh, it's very clever, but don't explain why it's clever. And then I say 4.2 stars. And I'm like, well,
why?
And then I start reading this book and I'm like, is it this clever? Like, am I giving it? But the thing is, it's literally in the text. Like, the climax of the book is him discovering or acknowledging that he has issues about his mother putting a thermometer up his ass and he's actually gay or bisexual and he's self-hating. And then you've got to put all together the fact that every woman he's ever had sex with. Sort of like, yeah, and why didn't you give any details of how you had sex with them?
Yeah, it's like, it feels like,
yeah, because it didn't happen. Yeah, it happened like twice.
This feels like, you know, how in especially in movies where there's like from the 80s where you have some boys amongst each other and then they all boast about, oh yeah, this girl I had, you know, but they don't really know.
They don't actually know.
Yeah, so it's just a phrase.
It's like the scene in, I think it's the scene in The 40-Year-Old Virgin. Have you seen that movie?
No.
And the way that all his work colleagues who are younger than him discover that he's never had sex because they're talking about sexual encounters and he's sort of like, yeah, and then I cup her breast and it feels like a bag of sand. And they're all like, wait, what? And so, like, you know, when it feels like a bag of sand, and they're like, you've never touched a woman's breast, have you? And he's like, I have. I went all the way. I really went all the way. I really had sex with her. And I'm like, oh, right. And that this book is sort of like, sometimes you're reading it like, oh, yeah, and I went out and had sex with this and I went and did this. And you're just like, you didn't. This is a facade. Mm. But here's the thing. It's a short book, so it doesn't get through. But oh my goodness, it takes a long time to get through all this not having sex with people. And that's what I felt this time.
You should take an e-book and type it in and then count how many times it comes out.
How many different women he has sex with. And I made some notes sort of like, it's self-evident why he, like, the book... Like, there's nothing that he ever says or does which ever makes you think that any woman would ever want to have sex with him.
Yeah.
The only reason, and I note this here, is that I am the protagonist. Of course, it's self-evident why all these women want to have sex with me.
Yeah.
But that's literally the truth. The only reason why all these women want to have sex with him is because he is the protagonist of his own story.
And he can say, I had sex with that person.
Yeah, I can say this. Like, yeah. I can write all the fictional characters I want and every single one of them had sex with me.
Yeah.
And that's not... It's not true. It's not interesting.
I'm
it's
just
not true
like, yeah, that makes
so,
sense.
So, yes.
So, basically, though, how much is this book actually science fiction? And how
it's they say, oh, it's about the Heechee saga and it's about this thing. And it's funny reading other people's reviews and also the review that I listened back to of me in 2009. I started listening to it and I'm like, what are you talking about? Like, I was honestly like confused about myself having just read the book and then him and I'm saying, and what it's about going out into the world and it's about this. But of course that was the format that I did because in back in the day I wouldn't just dive straight into a rambling discussion like this.
Right. It was more like a...
I had a format. So yeah. I'd start off with what's the world building, like what the world is like, and then what the story, you know, what story is told. Mm-hmm. And then I'd touch on the different characters and then hit on the like the main themes, you know, and that would be like the structure from the first few years of the science fiction
book
review podcast.
There was structure.
not like now where I kind of mention what book it is and then just go into a full spoiler discussion about like actually what the book is. But sure. Yeah, so I go through it and I said, the world building is this. It's about it being on a space station where there's this alien technology and I'm like, it's hardly about that. It really is hardly about that. So
I think
what's up
this kind of reflection on you realizing now that is not really what this book is about comes with age.
No, but at the time I could see what it was like. I could see what the book was like. But in the review, I didn't want to give spoilers. I was just saying, oh, I think there's some genius level writing going on here.
Right.
And then I don't mention it. I'm like, and then I give it 4.2 stars. And I'm like, wow. Like unless I tell people what I think is clever about the book, that it's about suppressed homosexuality and that every single woman he has sex with is a lie. Or except for maybe two.
Yeah.
You know, the two women who look most like his mother or whatever.
She's also... so weird.
I know, but it's a send-up. It's a parody of Freudian analysis and therapy.
Of
and
course.
That it is. It's very, you know, it's joking about all this kind
that,
of stuff.
That, I mean, that actually I can understand, because having a robot being a Freudian psychoanalyst.
Yes. It's a joke. The whole thing is a parody, satire, joke about Freudian analysis.
Yes.
That's what the book is.
Right.
And again, in my previous podcast, I'm like, am I giving it too much credit?
Just you?
And now I'm like, am I giving it too much? No, that is what the book, like, it confirms to me that surely my reading of this book is correct. However, I'm knocking my rating down.
Okay.
And also, I don't think this is a classic science fiction. I think this is, like, there could be just maybe I should just have, you know, must read 1970s books that explain, like, what science fiction was in the 1970s. But honest, please don't read them and think that that's good science fiction.
Don't
take this representation of all science fiction and what that is good about science fiction. But if you want to read some stuff where people are slightly misguided about what the new thing or the next thing that everyone's going to be accepting about in the future, maybe read some stuff from the 1970s. Because again, I think there was just they kind of zigzagged over there for a bit and then they came back and we're like, oh, now we're back on course. Right, now we're back on course of what progress is. And we're like, maybe it wasn't about free love and ..
It reminds me a little bit of how the 1920s were. That was kind of like a really like big diversion into like free thinking kind of era.
Well,
and then it turned 90 degrees sharp, went backwards.
Yeah.
And then people after the war had time again to go like in the in the free thinking.
Well, honestly, I think it was just these world wars kind of mixed lots of people together.
Yeah. But then it's always going in zigzaggy lines.
Yeah.
And then the 70s, and then after that, again, a sharp line. And then you have different books that come out of this.
Yeah, here's my theory. I think it's about this mixing theory, which I think I might have mentioned on a podcast before. I don't know where I got it. I might have come up with it myself. Or the new version of this is that when you have big lots of mixing, you get periods of societies which more people are more free and more experimental.
Mm. Yeah.
So after the First World War, you got the 1920s.
Yeah.
Because all of the troops together in the trenches and there's mixing up and people like Australians coming over and fighting here and Americans and French people and British people, all, you know, getting together, lots of people. And the same thing happened after the Second World War. And you got lots of experimentation and freedoms after that and the people who grew up after that.
Yeah.
Like, there's a reason why, you know, pop music came about in, you know, in the 1960s in Liverpool, because that's where all the ships were coming in.
Yes.
You know, all the ships from America were coming in and all the records were being dropped off there. And there was a mixing of culture. And up in Detroit as well, all of the black people from the South who
Motown.
Yeah, they moved up to Detroit to work in the car factory, or the war factories, but then car factories.
Yeah.
And it set off Motown, which is this big mixing of stuff. And we're like, oh, music is happening now and like that all kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And that big mixing. And I think that's what's happened with the internet. This mixing of people on the internet and breaking down of barriers and more people being exposed to more culture from around the world.
Globalization.
And it's not just globalization, because I'd say globalization is more of a trade kind of thing.
Mm.
And this is a bit more of a like, oh, there's weird people over here as well. And there's different. I'm just saying it's like, it's just a thing which I think there's going to be a mixing. And I reckon once people get used to the mixing that the internet has provided, I think there's, like you say, there's going to be, probably we're going to go swing back in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
And there's going to be a little bit more, I wouldn't say clamping down, but people are just sort of like, oh no, maybe not that much mixing,
That's what's happening at the moment.
Could
like,
be.
Right,
Could
right,
be.
With all the political stuff that's like happening in the different countries, and we're just in between times.
Yeah, I mean, it happens on a smaller scale, like country by country, or like city by city, or like partly. But I'm just saying, on a worldwide thing, I think it takes these big world events to mix people together, and then afterwards, there's like a decade of freedom, or two decades of freedom, or whatever it is.
Yeah,
and then we all go back. All right, no, actually, let's get on with like putting people back in boxes and like get everyone back into the offices and do everything like that. We're not all going to be free partying in Berlin or going off to.
Yeah, the 90s, like club scene in Berlin, crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Like that was like...
Again, Berlin Wall comes down suddenly.
Bunkers and
like,
techno.
Mixing. And like, oh, mixing. All right. Yeah. Oh, everything's getting mixed up.
Yeah,
and influences coming from everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so I think that the... yeah, like that 1970s science fiction is so much of its time. And again, what, like, I know that we're in, you know, whatever that is, whatever the new version of it is now. Oh, I say I know. I think there's signs to say that the world is going to, again, this is not my belief, this is just me positing of what I see as a critic, as an analyst, and someone who talks about this guy, as an observation thing. And I'm not saying any of this is correct, and I'm not saying anything is right. I'm just saying I reckon, in the same way that in the 1990s or 1980s, 1990s, like, all of the movies were about how, you know, young men wanted to have sex, you know, and now we're like, hey, wasn't that a bit rapey? And now we're all like, yeah, that was a bit rapey. You know what I mean? And whatever the next thing is going to be, we're all going to go, hey, was that a bit much? And then we're going to go a bit much. And I don't know what it is. Again, that's always what I came back to that I mentioned in the previous book, is that I don't know what is the thing that we're all going to say. Not that one. But this other one over here. And I'm like, wait, that one? And they're like, oh, great. And I'm like, so what do I need to learn now to whatever? Yeah,
well, keep learning. And also, if we have this podcast for another 20 years, will find out.
Yeah, we'll find out. We'll look back and go, oh, yeah, remember we talked about this 20 years ago, back in episode 555. Oh, no, we're actually 555 is a really good episode. No, it was last episode.
Oh,
but
no,
I forgot to mention we're actually 556.
We missed it.
Yeah.
I wanted to mention one more thing.
Oh, yeah,
I think on the Goodreads, SFBRP listener group, discussion forums, they're different threads. And I think there were some interesting ones about this book or the Friedrich Paul, or like there were some interesting thoughts by listeners. And I think if people want to join in, that's some really good points being made and discussions.
There's a good one episode, the episode feedback thing as well.
Yeah. I really enjoy reading it. I'm not so vocal on these things, but I read all the comments and really enjoy all the discussions going on there.
Yeah. Someone mentioned something about that as well. It said, seriously, look, if people cancel you or this is from Mark, if people cancel you or the SFBRP from your comments, well, they are just being silly. You and Juliana could not be more careful and considerate with your commentary on matters of gender. Although that wasn't actually what I was saying, don't cancel me. I was talking about, that was something else. I was saying, just because I'm saying something isn't fascist doesn't mean I think fascism is good. Yes. You know, it's that kind of thing.
But thank you, Mark, so much for this comment.
Yes, it's good.
It's really appreciated that you see us in that way.
Yeah,
it's nice. I also thought that was a comment by Amy further up about, I don't know if it was on this one, but anyway, we see all these comments and it's fun that you engage there, and I find it interesting, and also find it interesting when you then recommend books. I've now just finished reading the book by Merle Lafferty, Station Eternity.
Oh, I haven't read that. We'll do an episode about it.
Well, I don't have that much to say about it.
Here's the episode. No, here's your episode. Do you think Luke should read it?
No.
Okay, we won't do an episode about it then.
No. But it was on the library.
I haven't finished my review of Friedrich Paul's Gateway yet. Are we moving into a different... Oh, is this still... Are we still
that
on the topic
of... That had to
do
with it, but I can't remember the thread that I'm now wanting to point out.
Okay, what I wanted to do is give this book a rating.
Oh, yeah.
And
go
also,
for it. What is,
it? Is it included in the SFBRP must-reads list?
Is it?
No.
Okay.
Because, again, it's like... I don't think it stands up. I think it's clever. Mm. I enjoyed reading it, but it is super problematic in the way that it's dealing with its subject matter.
Right.
Because for all the, like, this is what I wanted to come back to, for all the progressiveness it wants to have, and it's playing in the space. Again, it's the wrong person playing in the wrong space.
Yeah.
And the if you say, oh, if you're a homosexual, then you have to be self-loathing, and because you think you're self-loathing about your feminine side for thinking that you're homosexual, it means you have to be actually loathing against women.
Yeah,
this book is like misogynistic in a way which I should have probably foregrounded way earlier in this conversation.
Right,
and it's really problematic in that way and not enjoyable in that way.
Yeah,
so. If I'm, it's a pity that I'm only mentioning this now at 58% of the way through, after actually saying I think it's very clever. It's very clever, but also super problematic.
No, I think you mentioned enough times how he talks about the.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I just wanted to say that's the thing that I found like super rough reading it this time.
Yeah.
Which I remember also feeling that in like 2009,
yeah,
but was kind of like more interested in like reviewing it just as like the cleverness of it, rather than now being, ah, in 2009 you could probably read this and be like, all right, yeah, whatever, but it's like an old guy writing this in the 1970s, this is fine. And now I read it and it's like starkly uncomfortable in now more places.
Now I think it's more acceptable also that you can say this about a book like that, like in the 2000s and 1990s or whatever, it was like, yeah, okay, that's just how books were written, you know.
Yeah, it's just a bit more noticeable, and also I guess I'm less comfortable with it. So yeah, I'm gonna knock my rating down to 3 stars for this book.
Okay.
Again, I'm not saying like that anybody else should feel bad about a rating at 5 stars, and I don't think anyone's mistaken for only rating at 1 star or 2 stars, especially if they read it at face value.
Yes.
But I never thought this was a face value kind of book. This is an unreliable narrator book. And I think by the end of the book, actually what it's focused on is very, very clear. And what's going on is a lot more clear.
Okay.
Of course, I read other people's reviews and nobody goes into this. And for me, it's like the most obvious thing. And other people are like, it's a great space adventure. Oh, and that therapy stuff was like a bit boring. And I'm like, the book is about... Anyway. So yeah. I'm very sorry if other people don't pick up on what I think is very obvious and other people are subtle, but this is just how I read. This is what I get out of authors, especially when the author is telling me very clearly that this is what the book is about by literally at the end of the book telling me what the book is about.
Yeah, right. That's good.
And so it makes sense of all the boringness at the start and the cowardliness and the misogyny and this guy obviously isn't having as much sex as he says he is.
Yeah.
Yes. What did I just call it? 3 stars.
Not on the list and 3 stars.
3 stars, not high enough to get onto the list, and it's not a foundational text in the same way that some other books, which I give a lower rating to, or would feel are dated, but like they're dated, but it's a great example of something that's foundational to the rest of science fiction. This book is not that.
Right. Would you consider reading a few more Fredrik Pohl books, like maybe earlier books?
No, I've read books of his in the past. Like I said, in the 1990s, Fredrik Pohl was just one of the authors who was around and you read because he was one of the grand masters of science fiction, you know, along with Arthur C. Clarke and, you know, Stephen Baxter, whoever the big names were in the like 1960s, 70s, 80s. Actually, maybe set Stephen Baxter a bit later, but either way, whatever. Yeah. It's like... He was just one of the names. I've read plenty of books by him. Okay. I don't need to read any more.
Good.
Why that, good?
Well, no, that's no,
there's some,
like,
there's some authors who I'll go back and read more of.
Yeah,
you know?
But it's also good to have just read and
done it,
enough.
Completed it. All right. I've done all my notes. You're not going to read Station Eternity? No, you're not going to review Station Eternity on a podcast?
No, it's...
And you also tell me I'm not going to read it.
No, I don't think you should, because it's not in your...
I'm going to trust you. You've done this before and I've trusted you.
Yeah.
And it worked out. And then other times I've read it anyway and was like, Juliana was right. So I'm gonna trust you for this one.
Yeah.
You should not read Gateway.
No, I wasn't planning on that. Really didn't sound like a book I would enjoy.
So I finished Dune. We'll get an episode of Dune out probably before the end of the year. Or I say that I'm leaving on a work gig.
It's
then I'm
really
back for
cramped,
2 days over Christmas, and then I'm leaving on another work gig. We wanted to do our Christmas marathon. We're going to do a movie marathon Christmas. We tried doing this a few years ago with The Matrix, but we never got around to watching the final Matrix movie.
No, we didn't actually.
The fourth Matrix movie.
We did do that with Mission Impossible.
Yeah, but that was years ago. Anyway, this year we're going, we'll do this Dune one. We'll rewatch Dune 1 and 2, part 1 and 2, and read the book, and we'll do it. And then we got the idea of doing a Lord of the Rings marathon.
Extended edition.
And we're 50% of the way through, because we watched the first movie. It took us 2 nights.
Yes.
And now we've watched the first half of the second movie.
Yes.
But it honestly might be the new year before we get enough time to get all the way through to the end. So over the next few weeks, at some point, expect an episode about Dune.
Yes.
The book versus the movie.
Yes.
And then Lord of the Rings... Not the book versus the movie. We're just going to talk about the movies.
Yeah. But also expect there to be some gaps now.
Yes. This might be the last episode. Definitely the last episode before Christmas. And probably the last episode before the new year. So Merry Christmas. Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes.
And that's it.
Thanks for listening.
Should we just wrap it up there?
Yeah, let's do it.
Thanks a lot for listening. And we'll catch you next time.
Goodbye.